Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul, in the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign, but to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee, and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign, but to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I am the light within your soul, in the essence of truth and right, love makes a circle whole. And when I call to thee, and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat
Shabbat Shalom, Holy Angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I am your hostess. The music you were just listening to at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shemshai, a group that I connected with down in the Arizona area who's now traveling worldwide and enjoying themselves cutting new CDs. They just had one come out about 2 months ago, I'd say it was. And you can always connect with them through Facebook and their website at shemshai.com. And that's S-H-I-M-S-H-A-I.com. I want to extend a welcome, whether you are joining us here for the first time or whether you've listened into our shows in the past and you've decided to come back and see who our guest is, because as you know, we're always shifting and changing who our guest is from week to week and what we have that we're offering here. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at the different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. And some weeks I'm discussing different aspects of how compassion is in our life and how it affects our life, as well as the different areas of compassion. And then some weeks I'm doing more exercises and practical implementations. And then most of the time, especially this year, I have guests on the show so that you can learn about their work and how other things complement and work with compassion. And in addition to that, I highlight different musical artists along the way. Earlier this year, we had Stephen Halpern. Jill Mattson was another person we had on this year. The end of last year, we had Claire Hedin. And just last week, we had the 8-time Grammy nominee, Peter Kater. And then I also have just varying things that are going on from night to night. So, you know, every now and then I just do kind of a fun show. But remember, too, that coming in, and I love to see the comments and chat that are coming through, it really is a great thing there, and I will be watching that chat room to see if anybody has questions. So you can always type questions in there if you want to. And then in my own personal work, I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I've created the Genesis Clearing Statement, which some of you may have experienced on previous shows. And if you missed that, actually, Kevin, I see Kevin sitting in our chat room tonight, and he did a great interview on me just before I started my own show here on the network, and you can go back and catch that in the archives. It was in September of last year, and that's definitely worth listening to if you'd like to find out about that Genesis Clearing Statement. And then I've also authored two books, and they're titled Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the Workbook. I've got two more in the process right now. They're finished. They're just kind of working their way through the publishing process right now. And then I've also created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour, which includes workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. And I do have an event that's going on this year. It's called the Matriarch Gathering, which I'll be speaking at. And if you'd like to get involved in that, and there is actually a day that's a co-ed day, which is the Sunday. It's October 4th through 6th. And that's going to be a great event. It's in Colorado, and you can check it out at thematriarchgathering.com. Definitely worth checking it out. They have only a few spaces left. They sell out pretty quick. So if you're interested, go check it out and get your space reserved on that. Then also you can follow events available to register for on the Compassion Tour, as well as what I do here in the Southern Utah area, at jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And there's also an option there called Gifting the Tour for those that are unable to attend, but they'd like to support the work I'm doing, maybe help me get out to some of the fundraisers, things like that. You can certainly do that as well. And in addition, I've also started a set of online courses and workshops around moon cycles and things like that. It's got different topics that I delve into. I'm actually going to do a 17-part series on the chakras on the online courses, and I just did a Lunisod honoring as well in that, so you can check that out at www.learnitlive.com /invite, that's INVITE, /JessieAnnNicholsGeorge. So lots of ways to check things out. And just a reminder, if you enjoyed the show this evening, make sure that you do tell your friends, family, significant others, and all those great social media friends that you've got out there. They can come in and they can listen to it through the same link you came to, and they can listen to it at any time in the archives that they're convenient. So they can also go to my Activating Compassion page at facebook.com/activatingcompassion/notes, as well as my webpage, which is JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1, that's number1.com. And both of those places keep all of the archived shows, so they can go back and check in the previous shows as well as this one. And on my webpage, I've also got a whole Main Street Universe section there, which covers all of the hosts that we have here on Main Street Universe. Now, before we get started, as those of you who have listened to the show before know, what I like to do is I like to delve into the 72 Names of God, Technology for the Soul by Yehuda Berg. As most of you know, I love his work because he is a Kabbalah master, so to say, and with his work, it's just put into more everyday terms, which is what I like to do with my work as well. And so he kind of takes those big concepts and put them down. And what I do is I just randomly open into the book to see what our message is for a week, which, by the way, this also goes on my Jessie Ann Nichols page under the Main Street Universe tab on my website. So if any of you would like to go back and read this during the week or catch it, you can do that as well. So let's see what message Yehuda has for us tonight. And the name of God that we're dealing with tonight is unity. Instead of trying to be right, we must recognize that there is a higher truth, unity. We need to seek harmony with our opponents, not because this is normal, not because this is moral behavior, but because unity brings us lasting spiritual light. It serves our own best interest. And the insight that he gives on this is, two people can have opposite opinions and conflicting viewpoints, yet both can be right. Enmity and bitterness occur when people respond reactively to one another, with intolerance to each other's view. True spirituality disregards vague concepts of right and wrong. It aspires to a higher truth, the notion of unity, sensitivity, and tolerance for other viewpoints. What good is being right if suffering and pain are the cost? What is so terrible about being wrong if personal peace, joy, and contentment are the rewards? It is only the ego that worries itself with being right or wrong. The soul's sole concern is unity, for unity begets peace and happiness. When we treat others' viewpoints with dignity, especially when it's painfully difficult to do so, we often discover a new idea that brings blessings into our own life. This sacred name should be used when we are stuck in our ways, clinging to our own long-held opinions and seething with anger and frustration at the ideas and beliefs of others. And the meditation that Yehuda provides with this is, through these letters, you pass the true test of spiritual character. You are able to see all sides of the problems that come before you. Your focus is upon unity and soul as opposed to division and oneself. And the way that this name is pronounced, although unity is the common name, it is pronounced Mem Yud He. Mem Yud He. So that's Yehuda's message for tonight, and what a great message, and I think very fitting with our guest, because the topic that we're going to be on tonight is definitely going to talk about, in some ways, how to unify ourselves, as well as unifying with spirits and others. Now, when we look at the topic that we have tonight, now I've known many that have used meditation, visualizations, and imagery led by others with some pretty good success in creating physical, mental, and emotional healing. Now, however, when we start looking at the self-guided process of this, it seems that many more have been challenged by that aspect. And I have heard many people say that they struggle with distractions, falling asleep, their mind drifting away from what they really want. So can the results of self-guided imagery bring us the results that we seek? Last week, I talked about the energy of music. And I know for me, it was a big catalyst in how well I have been able to do self-guided imagery or not. And when the music could transform me completely into it, I found it was much easier to remain focused, and the images that I could create were much stronger. The challenge I see in current times is perhaps more related to people having a sense of being overwhelmed or stressed out, and that leaves their mind having difficulty getting quiet. I've got friends that I know their mind works like a remote control, so it's like click, 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 click all the time in there, and it's hard for them to quiet it. I also see this with the rise, for example, of ADD, ADHD, dyslexia, and other types of challenges along those lines, and those are the types of things, like my friend, whose mind just clicks all the time like a remote control. Now, ironically, I've found also that those that have the greatest difficulty entering these states can also have some of the most vivid images created. Their minds are creative, and they see with great detail, and that's a trait that's often found, for example, in the indigo children. And the ability to see in these terms can also create an experience with greater results, since they can really take in all the aspects through all the senses of something. Sight, smell, taste, sound, and they take it in with a lot of detail. So, you know, people that have those issues or have those challenges, it's important to not give up on trying these techniques, because a lot of times you really have that ability to access it even stronger. And we've learned that the more detail and through the more senses that we can take something in, the more our minds see it as an actual experience. And it is in these experiences that we can make the changes and transformations that we seek. Now, Leslie Davenport believes that this is something that everyone can learn and has been helping others master this very process. She sees images as the natural language of our intuition as well as being the wisdom of the heart. And it is in my experience that this is a natural universal language that facilitates us in communicating with spirit and creating results in our lives. So I'm going to give you a couple of questions to think about here. What are your experiences with self-guided imagery? Do you have techniques that you have used that allow you to focus easily? And have you had successes creating healing and transformation using self-guided imagery? This week, our guest focuses on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books of no more pain. This reminds us that we have the choice not to suffer. Some have been in very dire circumstances and yet have not suffered. Suffering is a choice, and we can choose to make transformations which move us into great pleasure within where we can truly enjoy our life and thus create more enjoyable moments. Our guest tonight helps people to speak the language of intuition, live by the wisdom of their heart, and make the transformations that they so deeply long to make. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I will have Leslie Davenport. She will be sharing her work with us on how to do self-guided imagery. And the song that I've got for you during our break tonight is called Listen to Me. It's by Claire Hadeem. And if you'd like to find out more about our work, Claire's work, that is, you can go to her website at www.clairehedin.com, and that's C-L-A-R-E-H-E-D-I-N.com. And also, if you missed her show, it was the last show of 2013 for Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. You can go back and catch it in the archives. Absolutely wonderful show that we did at that time. We'll be back in a few minutes.
So you walk down the aisle, book are waiting for just one to catch your eye, and then you'll look through its pages. What will you find? All the answers to the questions that keep spinning through your mind. Well, never you mind, you'll seek what you find, 'cause the universe is listening to your mind. Listen to me. Answers everywhere. You sit at a table in a room with a view, and as you look out the window, your life looks back at you. You stop for a moment. What are you to do? Did anyone ever really tell you that your life would look at you? Well, never you mind, you'll seek what you find, 'cause the universe is listening to your mind. Listen to me. And you might turn on the TV, and your room is filled with stars. You will see exotic lifestyles, envy brand new cars. And then you start dreaming you wanted to be yours. One minute you were happy, but now you're not so sure. Well, never you mind, you'll find what you seek, 'cause the universe is listening as we speak. Listen to me. Answers everywhere. Perhaps it's in a church where you seek your solitude, and if not, the voice of God can reach you through the Christian tune. The church is in your living room as well as on your street. You see, the gods are pretty versatile. With the voice of man they speak. If you choose me, you'll be complete. I am the universe, so listen as I speak. Listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. Listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. I will set you free. Set you free. You see answers everywhere. Answers that you seek there in those passing conversations and books and films that we might see. We're not short of answers, it's the questions that we need. You see, the questions are the gateways, the things that set us free. Ask the right questions and you'll see that the universe is listening as we speak. Listen to me.
Welcome back. You are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and my name is Jessie Ann Nichols George. I am your hostess this evening, and you were just listening to a song called Listen to Me by Claire Hedin. Again, you can find out more about her music and her work. She does a lot of wonderful things with nature in addition to her music, and that is all found out at her website, www.clairehedin.com, clarehedin.com. And I'd like to bring on my guest tonight, Leslie Davenport. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist for over 20 years with a focus on the health impact of thoughts and emotions and passion for the mystery of the human spirit. She is an ordained interfaith minister. Leslie integrates the role of meaning and the spiritual dimensions of life into health and healing. She was a founder of the Humanities Program at Marin General Hospital, which evolved into the Institute for Healing and Healing in collaboration with California Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco. Leslie is also the author of Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery, consulted on holistic health promotion and complementary therapies, a resource for integrative practice, and regularly contributes to the Huffington Post. Leslie has over 10 years teaching experience in the college and university system. She also has done multiple speaking engagements on television and at conferences, and has been honored with the Marin Breast Cancer Council's Honor Thy Healer Award. And Leslie also currently maintains her own practice, and we're going to be discussing her work in integrated psychotherapy and guided imagery. And you can also learn more about her work at www.lesliedavenport.com. And that website is at the bottom of the show description, so you can certainly take a look at it there. And I'm just going to try to get her mic opened up. I'm not sure. It's a little temperamental here on my switchboard. There we go. It's coming in. And Leslie, welcome to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
I really appreciate you giving your time to us tonight and taking the time to be here with us. I know it's a little bit on the late side, but we enjoy having you here.
Oh, I love it. I'm so relaxed already from the music you played.
Well, you know, Claire is actually in the area that you are. She does a lot of performances in that area, and she's really, really wonderful. She teaches one of the universities around the Bay Area, and I think she's kind of a little more towards the Berkeley region up there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got some amazing programs going on. But we're here to talk about you tonight, not Claire. Back and listen to the archives and find out all about Claire. But I would love to have you start off by sharing some of your background leading up to the work that you're doing now and some of the work that you're going to share with us tonight.
Okay. You know, through life there's so many threads that begin at an early point and we never quite know where they're going to lead. And I actually, before I was doing what I am now, I had a career in dance as a modern dancer. And I mention this because for me, dance was so much about exploring the interconnections between our thoughts, our feelings, our inner qualities, sense of spirit, and the body. And I mention that because there's in many ways that really laid the foundation for what I do now. Even though on the outside it looks so different because it was a very active life as a dancer and now I spend a lot of time sitting in a chair listening. But on an internal level, the inner pathways are the same ones that light up as occurred when I was actively choreographing. So I would do things like just invite a quality into my being and without editing as much as possible, just let my body do what it wanted to do. And did it want to slump to the floor or run in a circle or leap or be symmetrical? And that exploration of how one thing affects another and how it travels through the different channels is what I think really led me into the work I'm doing now.
I think that that's really interesting to me, because I did a lot of dance as well in my younger years, modern dance, ballet, jazz. And I was just talking with somebody about that today, actually, about dance and how that was such a probably a great catalyst for me in being able to release emotions and open up my mind and be able to create some of those visualization states in there. Yeah, it really is.
And that ability to trust something other than the thinking mind, which we'll end up talking more about. But, you know, it really is, that's so much about what imagery is for me, is not so much learning something as it is letting go of things we've learned in order to reconnect with a natural state that to a large degree in our culture is a bit dormant because it's so undervalued and underutilized at this point in time.
Well, and I know when I started working with imagery many, many years ago, that one of the things I loved about it was exactly that I could let go. It didn't have to be logical anymore. When I would disappear off into visualization time or things like that, I could be and do anything I wanted. It was like the adult version of, you know, playing make-believe.
Uh-huh.
And yet I knew that, you know, just like children, you know, when you're playing make-believe, you also kind of create that at the same time.
Yes. Yes, very much so. And in fact, I mean, I think we're already on a really good point, which is that for me, imagery is a lot about a type of deep listening. Rather than, are you hearing that technical thing, by the way, kind of a static in the line?
I'm not.
Okay, good. Then I'll just try and ignore it. It's sort of coming and going. Yeah, so for me, imagery is a kind of deep listening where something that is already in existence but perhaps not quite fully manifested, imagery helps it sort of cross over that threshold into something, into an image, into a flash of insight, into a feeling, into a felt sense. And so it's, for me, it's a very sort of a co-creative process with life or mystery or something that's wanting to come through that we engage with and go right up against the edge where it can become manifest.
And I'm glad you took that aspect, because I was going to ask you what self-guided imagery was about, and you just answered that. I think it's really a good point that you bring up, that it's a deep listening. I like that concept a lot, and that it's a co-creative process. But that deep listening, because I found a lot of times when I would go into imagery aspects and I would go into those times, that a lot of times what things would come up as, or where I would find myself drawn to certain settings or things like that, was really a deep stirring inside of me that was longing to connect with something there.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, a simple delineation to make is a lot of guided imagery is done with a script, a recording, which certainly has its place and can be helpful. But the work that I love is that the listening just becomes the guide, you know, that the you know, like even when I'm working with someone and I'm acting as a facilitator for them, I never suggest the image. I rather help them point their awareness deeper within themselves, and when images begin to arise that they start to verbally articulate, I help them explore what's there, what the feelings are and the qualities and the messages and what it may mean for them.
And to kind of clarify that for some of the people that are out there that are still maybe learning about some of these things, it would be kind of the difference between where some are very structured and they would say, you know, walk down a tree-covered path that has a lot of vegetation all around the sides of it and these types of fern-like plants and so on and so forth, versus saying, see yourself walk down a path.
Or I would even say, let's say the goal or the intention is to enter into a relaxing environment, maybe even a healing place or a sacred place. I wouldn't even suggest the path. I would, and this is after a relaxation process, so where it's easier to go into a more receptive, relaxed state. But then I would say, okay, I invite you to allow an image to form for a place that is, and I would use the words we've used ahead of time, that is relaxing and peaceful, where you can really be yourself without any other kinds of pressures or expectations. And when it begins to take shape, I'd like you to describe out loud whatever you're noticing. And it's so fascinating because sometimes when I do this with people for the first time and we're talking about it before we actually do the process, they'll say, oh, this will be great. I have a favorite beach in Kauai and I'm looking forward to kind of revisiting that. And I'll say, that sounds great. And, you know, if it happens that surprisingly, there is something else. Let's just kind of go with whatever appears. And so they think they know what's going to happen. But instead, what is so commonly occurs is they might say something like, wow, you know, I haven't thought of this place in 20 years, but I'm on my grandmother's farm. And there's something about how comforted I feel by, you know, the scent of the apple trees or whatever it is. And because whatever they might have been needing inside themselves, and maybe it was more of a sense of comfort than a different kind of peacefulness, that part just rises up in a way that typically has an element of surprise and yet in the moment somehow feels so right. And I often think of the element of surprise being a good indicator that the imagery process is really engaged, because we're using a different part of the person than that thinking part of their brain that came up with the Kauai prediction.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a really good point, because our brain will automatically access things that our conscious mind has forgotten about. Our conscious right. mind might be thinking, oh, that beach in Maui, but our brain
right.
is saying, no, this is what I'm longing for. I'm longing for the orchard on old grandma's farm. And, you know, and it's something that our conscious has totally let go of or not thought about. And then, of course, there's all the symbology that can go behind the apple orchard versus the beach in Maui that goes with that. And I will say that I believe that there is a time and space and things for that more specific imagery and guided imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you. When we're looking at that personal inner journey and we're looking at using it as a learning process and a way to listen to ourselves, the methods that you're talking about are much more effective in getting
into. You know, and the other thing, too, is even if we know a client, a person really well that what we may be guiding an imagery process with, there's likely going to be some things we don't know. And so, for example, with something that is a little more scripted, like being on the West Coast, there's often beach imagery comes up. But if I were to say, you know, hear the sound of the waves and the warmth of the sun, well, if it happens that that person had a really bad experience at the beach when they were a child, they almost drowned or something like that, and I didn't know that, then the sound of the waves could actually be quite anxiety-provoking.
Exactly.
And there's so many things that we end up having a very personal association with that could be a very healing and supportive one or a very difficult one.
That is so very true, and I think that too, sometimes even the person going through it, again, on a conscious level, might not be aware that, oh, I've got this anxiety around the beach, but then it gets triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, that could be an asset from a therapy aspect, but it's
right.
not going to get peacefulness that you're looking for during that session. I do, Leslie, have Kevin in our chat room, and he's got a question here, actually
okay.
a couple of questions. And he says, does going to that place of bliss sort of whitewash something we don't want to face?
Oh, I love that question. I describe imagery, and this is going to sound, you'll hear my therapeutic training in this, but there's a way that it is both diagnostic and therapeutic. And what I mean by that is if there's something that's unresolved or traumatic or needs to be explored within the person, it will enter into the imagery state, and I have to say almost always. And the way it might happen is, again, if the goal, and I'll talk about many, many other forms of imagery, but creating a safe place is often a great way to start. So they might start by walking along the beach of their own accord and things are seeming fine, and then they'll start describing that there are these big clouds overhead and it's starting to feel ominous, and there's a figure at the end of the beach that they're really uncomfortable about all of a sudden. And things enter into the imagery the way they enter into, say, a dream, because the process of getting there has softened a lot of our usual defense mechanisms. So,
mm-hmm.
yes, it can drop us very much into a very pure bliss state, but in getting there, we travel through different layers of experience and different layers of consciousness, and very often those, again, I think unresolved is a good way to say it, traumas or other things enter in quite quickly. And sometimes for someone who's had a very strong traumatic background, just the ability for someone to create a healing space can be a fairly long-term focus.
That's true, because I think on a conscious level they tend to be very busy trying to keep that control, and
mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
sometimes when they move into imagery they don't always feel like they have control. I know when I used to teach meditation classes and do visualization with people, and I would always remind them that they have complete control.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Situation. So if they come across something that they don't like, pay attention to it and understand what it is, and, you know, acknowledge it, but realize that they have control to say, I don't want you here anymore.
Exactly. And just to add a little more to that topic, imagery, because it's basically based on awareness, can be used for so many things. So the whole thing about a relaxing, healing place is one of the, again, a foundational one and probably one of the more commonly used ones, but it's very effective for working with trauma, as we've said, or facing really difficult things. I work a lot in a hospital environment, and so for someone may want to focus the imagery on a disease process happening in their body, which can be a really difficult thing to do, a challenging thing to look at. And so I sometimes say that once we have gained a kind of fluency in those wonderful, positive resourcefulness within that's always there, it gives us the strength and the buoyancy to then address absolutely anything, including, you know, what to someone might be their worst life experience. And
I think that's very true, and I know that I've used visualization to work, for example, on a cat to help with healing. And but I did a combination of using crystals and visualization, and I had a vet at that time, and he had x-rayed, and it was in her hip area, and I said, there's no way this cat's going to heal. You know, she's probably going to have this major surgery and so on and so forth. And I said, well, let me see what I can do first. And I worked with her, and I put some crystals in the water dish, and I did a lot of visualization work and just kind of focused that energy and held some crystals on her and did some imagery work. And I took her back to the vet, and they ran some more x-rays, and we checked. I said, I think she's absolutely fine. I go, well, medical professional, I need to x-ray to be certain because I need to make sure. Well, they took the x-rays. She managed to escape 3 or 4 technicians that were in there, holding them all at bay from under a desk. They were terrified to get her. And they called me in, and when they first said she's escaped, I thought, oh my gosh, she's gotten out of the building, she's headed to the freeway, you know. And now she was under this desk holding all of them back from under the desk. There's one little cat, right? And and I reach in, and they're like, don't, she'll like totally scratch you. And I'm looking at him going, no, she won't. And I reach in there, I say her name, and she just totally softens up, pull her out, take her back into the room, and the vet says, if I had not seen the x-rays from my own eyes, I would not have believed it.
Yeah.
There'd be no way you could have convinced me had I not seen the x-rays with my own eyes. So it is very, very powerful. Kevin also had a follow-up on his question that he says, would we get to a point where we could face it, or do we not need to face it because it is a false drama we created?
That's great. The form that the transformation takes, whether it's facing something or maybe it is in the process of exploring it, recognizing that it is a story or a kind of false drama we've created, will, in my experience, will reveal itself. And what needs to happen seems to vary a bit with different people. In other words, for some folks, it seems to need to be voicing, like let's say we seem to be talking a little bit about, you know, past trauma. So if it involved another person, saying something, feeling stronger, having a voice, making a different choice, doing something that wasn't possible at the time to kind of reshape a belief related to empowerment. And for some people, it seems to need to be enacted as a way for that to shift. I think for some people, just seeing something with a kind of insight where things just dissolve or crumble, because it can be seen for being insubstantial in the way I think he's referring to, is what happens for others.
Okay, so he's following that up with, how are the false dramas we create helpful?
These are such big, wonderful questions.
Yeah, he does. Get some big ones in there. And why wouldn't we want that in our life?
Why wouldn't we want the drama or the release of it? I guess the best answer I have for. Go ahead.
We'll start with how are the false dramas we create helpful. Let's take one piece.
Right. I mean, for me, I don't know if I know the answer, but it seems like it's some kind of an unfolding process or a learning as we go, because it seems like the more depth work along the lines we're talking about, whether it's with imagery or some other way, that there are less dramas. We do start to see the way we create things unnecessarily, or when situations arise, come to realize that we have a much broader way of responding to it or how it might affect us, compared to what it's like before we do this kind of work. So I do think that the dramas definitely lessen as we get clearer on sort of what's real and what's not, and what we, I think in your introduction you were talking about unnecessary suffering. And that, I think, is the theme here, is the way we invest or attach or create certain things that we come to learn aren't real or aren't necessary, or, along the way sometimes we go through that, but then they're just shorter lived as we learn.
Right. I agree. And it really is about a choice, and the imagery can really, as you say, help us address those issues. They're kind of... I think we do have some of those unnecessary dramas, and I think that sometimes when we get into imagery, we can realize some of that. We can really, tap into, okay, this maybe isn't a necessary thing that we have to go through. And I know for me, it was at times it was kind of the great escape. From when I didn't like what was happening in my outer life, I just went into my inner world. And it wasn't so much that I wasn't dealing with the outer world, but it's kind of like children. They just don't feel like they want to dwell in the negative, so they go out and play.
Right.
I'm just not interested in this space, so I'm going to go be in this other space.
Yes.
But as you say, everybody deals with it differently, and sometimes they want to face it. Sometimes it's a way for them to step away from the intensity of the world and then, kind of like get recentered and regrounded and refocused where they can go back out and face the world again.
Yes, very much so.
We have a lot of different options there. Now, maybe you can help give us some clarity. What about those people that have a hard time focusing or falling asleep, or they might fall asleep and try to do imagery or meditation?
Well, it's sort of like, I hate to break the bad news, but it does require a bit of practice. But I'm sort of joking with the dire sound of that, but, you know, I really feel like most things of value in life do. You know, we might hear a pianist and just get so inspired and say, oh, I want to play like that, you know, and the inspiration gets us started. But, boy, do we go through the scales and getting our fingers in the right spot at the right time. Which can feel a bit effortful, but once we invest the practice, then it becomes second nature, and we can then have that foundation to fly with the same inspiration that originally got us there. You know, or athletes, or just about anything, you know, that the practice is a part of it, so that it's kind of like building a foundation under our feet that then allows us to improvise. So what I, you know, my suggestion for people who do, for example, get distracted, is very similar to kind of classic meditation instruction where there is something to focus on, whether it's initially the breath as part of the relaxation or the imagery as it arises. And whenever you notice that your mind has started to wander off, you bring it back. You know, and it is that just coming back that is a part of the, it is a part of the process. I don't like to even think of it as something other than. Mm-hmm. It's like building the muscle. It's integral to doing imagery.
I agree, and I think that with it too, for some people, and I know for me at one point, the music was great because the music gave me something to focus on with the breathing and other things. Mm-hmm. And the music stimulated to allow some of the imagery to come in easily for me, as well as giving my mind, you know, something that and as well as kind of blocking out some of the just distractions around the environment as well.
Yes.
I think with that and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I found with, you know, sometimes it's, your body's just tired and it needs to rest. You know, if you're always falling asleep, there's some of those
right.
those basics, or you can try sitting up versus laying down or things like that.
Yeah, in fact, you may have heard this, you know, I think it's a Buddhist story that, you know, if you fall asleep, then, you know, sit up. And if you still fall asleep, sit in a hardback chair. And if you still fall asleep, try standing, and if that still doesn't work, stand with a bowl of water on your head. And if that still doesn't work, stand with a bowl of water on your head by the edge of a cliff. You know, and I think it's just a good reminder of, are we creating an environment that really will support what we're needing? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're making a great point, too, is that I think a lot of us are sleep deprived. Just, you know, we've got kind of a nonstop schedule, or it might be hard to sleep. And sometimes if that's what keeps happening, that's a message right there.
Right. Yeah. I've got somebody that is calling in here.
Okay.
I know. And I believe this is Kevin on the line. So I'm going to go ahead and open up his mic.
Okay.
If I can... The switchboard's been a little temperamental for me with getting mics opened. There we go. Hi, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Great. I love your show. Good content, good stuff talking about. And I was talking earlier about, do we bring these dramas into our life and, like, how are they helpful? I wanted to add one more thing to that I had a question about is, once we recognize that we're building all these dramas and that we sort of just rip the roots and all of the drama programming in us and we got like some 50 years left to live, what's left? See?
Well,
what happens when we become so cleansed? You know, like the absolute Buddhist with the absolute clarity to really just taking things as they come, whether it's, you know, abrasive or smooth. Realizing it in its moment, letting it be in its moment, and then moving on to the next element. There's nothing that needs to be fixed then, right?
Well, I think I'm hearing, and you can tell me if this isn't the case, I feel like there's some kind of an assumption or an implication in there that to be in that state would end up being boring or somehow disengaged in a way that would feel unsatisfying or something like that. Is there anything like that in there?
Yes.
Okay. Because my sense, and I can't honestly claim to be living from this place, but let me answer it from the impression I have, is that life is so vibrant and so rich that if we are clear of the dramas but have that much more direct engagement or experience with the fullness of life, with what I think could, even in a very simple way, kind of be the awe, the wonder, the almost miraculous nature of this dance that we're a part of. Because even without the dramas, it's not exactly like we have things figured out. You know, like, well, what, you know, what is life? And what is this planet and this universe and these beings that are one and yet somehow unique? And I think to describe it doesn't really do justice to what I think could feel like a very deep, peaceful, but rich experience versus something that just feels empty and kind of like, well, now what?
It's so expansive at that point that there is no boredom, because you have such great awareness and appreciation for life, for everything that surrounds you. You can see the magnificent, and as you say, Leslie, it's, you can see the wonder of everything. I mean, it's there's no boredom in that, because you've seen the magnificence in it all.
Yes. And I also think there's a some kind of a fine line or distinction around this idea that nothing needs fixing, because I understand where that statement is coming from, and I do think there's a truth in that. And yet, if we look at someone like the Dalai Lama, who might be one of the closest living people to kind of the state we're describing, he's very active. He's very active in teaching, in interacting with people, with writing, with leading. I think there's a way that he brings the teachings of Buddhism attempts to in a political sphere. I'm not sure how to say this, but it's sort of like, while on the one hand nothing needs fixing, I think on the other hand there is a way of engaging, I guess in the Buddhist tradition, since we're on that, it would kind of be the spirit of the Bodhisattva, that there is nevertheless a reason to engage in such a way that offers benefit.
I agree there. And I think, too, that, you know, even if you were to look at Christ and his life, for example, you know, He was there, but mm-hmm. in that life was always easy, even with all that enlightenment. And, you know, he was constantly busy. I think sometimes people have that misconception that bliss is doing nothing, when in reality a lot of the people that are the closest to that are constantly doing something almost.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, but they do take these times and these spaces. Leslie, is there a difference between imagery and visualization?
Yes, in my book there is.
And how?
Well, the reason I am on a bit of a mission to break the use of those interchangeably is that it goes back to what you were saying of certain people saying, well, I can't really do this. Either I'm too distracted or I can't picture something. And with imagery, we want to engage as many levels and inner senses as we can. But in the same way that in our environment, in our physical being, we can look out into the world, we can hear, we can smell, we can taste, we have physical sensation, we have that same combination in our internal imagery senses as well. So some people may see things more vividly than others. Others may hear with clarity the kind of wisdom that they're needing or guidance on a situation. Some people are more kinesthetic and would have a felt sense. So the reason I don't like to use it interchangeably is I believe it's something like slightly over the majority, 60-something percent of people who in their inner world have vision as their strongest sense. And so if you're in the other 40%, you think you can't do imagery. All it really is that your other senses are more dominant, and the vision one may not be as strong. But that's just like the variations we have in this world. So I don't like it because it puts a bias on kind of the majority rule thing there versus the understanding that it engages all of our senses and ways of knowing.
And I guess I would kind of relate it then to imagery being that free-form dance that you just put some music on and you move and you dance,
mm-hmm.
versus visualization being more of the choreographed performance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, in the sense that it's available to all of us. That in the moving, there is beauty and rhythm and form and structure. But that it's coming from within.
It's from within, and it's much more open, much more all inclusive, I guess.
Yes, and here's another aspect too. Is I think sometimes people get an idea in their mind about what it means to see something in imagery, like see mm-hmm. something with your eyes closed. And a way that I like to open that up a little bit is, and we can do that now, it just takes 1 minute, but I like
okay.
to ask the question. I just ask the question, and everyone can do this. How many windows do you currently have in the home you're living in now? Now, I'm just going to pause while everyone comes up with that answer. Okay, and that's probably enough time to kind of get the process going. What everyone inevitably does, because this is how we're wired, is they start on a little imagery journey to answer that question. They don't do a lot of preparation. They just kind of either look up or close their eyes, and suddenly they're you know, kind of picturing their living room and counting the windows and peeking down the hallway and looking in the bathroom and counting the windows. Because unless somebody has recently remodeled, nobody goes, you know, 14. But, you know, it's like that's not how we access the information. And whatever people, quote, saw by way of their living room or their bedroom or the hallway was clear enough to get the information they were after. In this case, something as simple as counting the windows. But if you have this idea in your head that it's supposed to be technicolor like some movie, and that's not what it looked like when you saw your living room, you discount what you're actually able to do. And so because imagery is really about accessing wisdom or entering a state of being, the seeing as well as all the other senses aren't the part that we're perfecting. It's just a kind of like the vehicle to get you to that state or that understanding. So in this case, the seeing the living room wasn't the most important part. It was using that ability to count the windows.
Right. And that's really interesting when we look at it from that aspect. You know, it's kind of like by asking a question, your mind automatically creates an image. Answer it. And it doesn't matter whether there's 8 windows or 14 windows or whatever there is.
Right. Or if you could picture the exact shade of the couch, it's kind of irrelevant. You were seeing well enough.
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly. It doesn't have to be the specifics. And so, interesting. I think that's something that we don't necessarily think about. And yet it's such a great example of how basically everybody can access doing that imagery.
Yes. And imagery is such a currency. Again, we're just not aware of it. Like it is a currency for memory, for example. And this is kind of a form of remembering, you know, your house. But I sometimes say, if anyone has ever worried or daydreamed, you've been successful in imagery. And it may not be, worrying may not be the most healing and transformative version, but it's also just a great example of how our mind, emotions, and body are connected. Because if you're worrying, boy, you can start to feel it. You can feel your heart speed up sometimes, your muscles get tense, depending how strong the concern is. Your palms might start sweating. There's just such a huge cascade of chemical changes in the body to absolutely every system of the body. When we worry, which is a kind of imagery. So what we learn to do is to use those channels, but to gain some experience with how to work with those in a more healing way, in a more empowered way.
Well, and I was actually going to ask you about that. How do people, or how can they achieve healing and transformation through imagery work?
Let me tell the story of a client I worked with, because the one that's coming to mind kind of hits several levels of healing, and it's really kind of a sweet story. So this gentleman, I'll call him Daniel, was in the hospital because at a youngish age, he had a heart attack. I'm trying to remember exactly how old he was. Might have been in his late 40s. But and because one of the programs I'm a part of is throughout the whole hospital system, and we are able to offer it free of charge, which I just love. He was someone kind of willing to try it, maybe not the kind of person who would have necessarily sought it out on his own, but that it's part of the cardiac rehabilitation program as kind of a stress management piece along with diet and exercise and other things. So first I just was helping him with some basic relaxation exercises and how to get a clearer delineation between when he's done with work and how to really relax more at home and not carry his work with him throughout the evening. And he was starting to experience some good results. He was sleeping a little better. So he decided he was open to trying guided imagery. And what he said he wanted to do was to visit his heart. He had had this heart attack. So the way the process works is I ask someone, I kind of guide them through breath work and how to relax their body, how to quiet their mind. And then I said, okay, now I'd like you to bring your focus, your awareness to your heart, to sense it from the inside out, and invite an image to form for your heart. And it might be literal and it might be a symbol. Just whatever begins to take shape, I'd like you to keep your eyes closed and describe out loud whatever you become aware of. And he described his heart, and he started getting a little teary pretty much right off the bat as kind of being bruised. To him, it seemed kind of bruised and tender. So we took a little time with that, and I was asking him if there's anything that his heart needed. And he got a message from his heart, kind of the voice of his heart said, I've been waiting a long time for you to come back. And he wasn't even sure what that meant at the time, but he got really moved by that. Something was resonating, even though he wasn't sure what was going on. So over the course of several sessions, I came to learn that he was in finance as his career, which his parents, I guess I have to tell a little bit of the backstory. I learned that his parents had come to this country as immigrants from Eastern Europe. And I think like a lot of families who come here, it was a situation where the parents really wanted to create a better life for their children and more opportunity. And what Daniel had wanted to do as a young man was to be a landscape gardener. But it didn't fit kind of the family's picture and quite a bit of pressure to do something that measured success through a particular frame of mind. And he came to understand that what his heart was telling him and what his heart was needing was for him to follow this calling of his own heart, his own, you know, what gives him joy, that kind of follow your bliss kind of theme. And it was over the course of a number of months, but in the process of doing imagery and getting clearer with all of this, there was a point where he came up with this ritual when he was deciding to honor his own heart more as part of his healing path. His father had died a few years earlier, so there was about a week where he had picked up a lovely pebble, a stone, from a garden in his neighborhood that he liked to walk through. And at different points throughout the week, he'd reach in and take a hold of the stone in his hand And he would consciously sort of send a message of thanks to his father for all the good things he had given him in his life. And at the end of the week, he took this stone and he placed it on his father's gravesite. And with kind of the message of giving back to the father the dream that belonged to him, so that there was more room for the son's own heart's desire and own heart's path to have room to manifest. So he did eventually make a career change. And he really believes, which I do too, that this way of working internally and externally, you know, coming, listening to his own heart and then manifesting it in a way where his life literally did transform, that the healing that was required needed both of those elements, that it was a very complete way of him to address the healing. And that kind of internal work, external circumstance, comes up a fair amount in working with people.
And that's really, I think that's really interesting, and it's such a great example of how we start in one place or have a physical issue or something that comes up, and we don't always understand where it's coming from or why it's coming up or why our bodies responded a certain way. And through the through that imagery process, we can actually get down to these correlations, this interconnectedness of one thing that's happening on an internal level and how it's manifesting on that physical, and it can really kind of bridge the gap in that communication or understanding.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so important. Leslie, you have a chapter in your book, Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery, that's titled Discover Your Inner Sanctuary. And I would love for you to talk a little bit more about how what the inner sanctuary is. And you kind of touched on this earlier in the show. And how do we find it? And I know you've got case studies in there, like you had one on financial problems and things like that.
Yeah. The way I've structured the book is kind of step by step of how someone can do this imagery on their own, unscripted, without a guide. I think it's certainly useful to have someone facilitate at least the first few times, but it's not necessary, and it describes how to do this. So what I suggest, it's very close to a version of what we were talking about of a safe and healing environment and a healing place, except that I have people create that as an internal image, again, a dropping down into their heart and inviting an image to form for a loving, supportive, sacred, whatever that means to a person, place that feels so ultimately safe and so ultimately compassionate. That's, you know, kind of your theme there with the show. And once that's been established, and I do believe it's a very important step to feel safe, I encourage people to come up with a simple topic, something distressing for them, something needing healing, something needing clarification, and then to bring this question into the inner sanctuary and invite an answer to arise, very much the same way that the sanctuary itself was able to arise. So that's kind of the format. So again, the how-to is there's instructions about getting comfortable, closing your eyes, taking some full breaths, relaxing your body, goes into a little more detail. And then just, it's as simple as posing the question. Once you're in that deeply relaxed state, inviting an image to form for that inner sanctuary, a place that has all the qualities that are important to you. And then to, once it starts to take shape, to notice as much about it as you can. The color, the texture, the aromas, the sound, the light, whether there's stillness or movement, what the qualities are when you're there, what it feels like to be in that place. And then once that's really well established, then you bring in the question or concern.
And that's, I think that's great. I think inner sanctuary work is something that I did quite a bit of with people, and I found it very, very interesting what would show up for them in that. And definitely from that peacefulness, it was easy for them to let go of things.
Yeah.
Once they were able to connect there, which is very, very exciting. I'm thinking, Leslie, that this could be a good time to let you do a little exercise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Well, you know, we can do a version of this inner sanctuary. So anyone who would like to do this will take, what would you think, maybe 10 minutes or?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
We can do about 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay, that sounds great. So any of you listening who want to try this, my only thing is you don't want to be driving a car.
Please, no driving with your eyes closed.
Exactly. And as we've alluded to a few times in the conversation, in my exercise, if there's anything that starts to feel uncomfortable or just not right for you, just either modify it, do something that does feel good, open your eyes, whatever you need to do. But the intention here is to be very... that this will be very relaxing and peaceful.
Wonderful. I'm just going to let you run with it.
Okay, sounds good. So as we do the inner sanctuary, it will be possible to take a few moments with a question, something you'd like greater clarity on, something that needs healing. So if you want to... just take a moment to consider what that might be now. You can just make a mental note. And then you can actually just set it aside and I'll invite it back in a few moments. So get yourself as comfortable as possible, and to either allow your eyes to close or just let them have a soft focus. And I'd like you to intentionally let your mind drift for just a moment to the earlier part of your day. Just things you did or people you saw, like little snapshots or short video clips. And then imagine wrapping those experiences in something like a bubble and start to let them drift out to the edge of your awareness. Because even though they were recent, they really are part of the past now. And just trust that if you want to retrieve them later, you can. And then do the same thing glancing into your evening, what you'll likely do a little later. Maybe it's getting ready for bed, whatever those routines are. Any expectations? And then do the same thing. Just wrap it in a bubble for now and also let it float out to the edge of your awareness, trusting that when those moments arrive, you can attend to them at that time. Just making a lot of room for this moment. And just notice how peaceful it is when the past or future thoughts are less active. Because this moment really is arising freshly. It's never been experienced before. It's uncluttered. So just begin to breathe in this quiet, spacious feeling. Let it ride along with the oxygen of the air, and letting that quiet feeling begin to infuse your whole body. We know that the oxygen we breathe travels to absolutely every cell. So let this quiet peacefulness come to your forehead and scalp. Let your eyes rest deeply. Let your jaw be loose. Relaxing breath into your neck and shoulders. Just allowing any tension or tightness just melt away or slide off your shoulders like an old winter coat. Let your breath flow into your arms and hands and fingers. Throughout your torso. Relaxing breath into your hips and legs, all the way down to the soles of your feet and toes. In the same way you invited your mind to relax and your body to relax, you can extend that same invitation to your emotions. Not that you have to make anything happen, but that invitation just to rest. And really welcoming all the levels of who you are into this peaceful place, even those deepest parts. Then take a few breaths, just imagining it were possible to breathe directly from the center of your chest, as though you could breathe from your heart. Kind of your emotional heart, your spiritual heart. Letting that breath feel like it can open a window. Bringing your attention down into that part of your body, into the center of your chest. Into your heart of hearts. Just just invite an image to begin to form of letting your heart of hearts show itself to you in some way as a place you can reside. And begin to notice any colors, shapes, textures. Notice the size of it, the quality of the light. Notice the sounds or silence that are part of it, the temperature. And find the place to be there where you can enjoy it the most, feeling the most comfortable and relaxed. And if there's anything that you want or need, go ahead and bring that in now. Notice how it feels. Notice the qualities of being here. And know that they're not only around you, but it's within you. And in this inner sanctuary, if you wish, you can now bring in gently that topic or question that you were looking at as we began. And just hold it lightly. Let it sit like a question a little ways in front of you. And in this environment that is so compassionate, so deep, just invite a response to appear that would shed light on that topic. Again, just exploring whatever appears, whether it's a figure, a symbol, a flash of clarity. And you can feel free to ask whatever appears, anything you might want to add even greater understanding. Allow it to speak to you. And in a moment, we're going to bring this toward a close, so take this last opportunity for anything else that wants to be expressed or known. And anything that feels important or valuable, really allow it to imprint itself in you so that it's very accessible, very familiar. And anything that doesn't fit, you're free to release and let go. So knowing that you can always return to your inner sanctuary in a similar way at any time. Keep with you everything of value and the feelings, but allow the images to begin to dissolve for now, so that you're reorienting yourself again to the room that you're in, to the place, the time, the sounds, the light. And when you feel ready, you can open your eyes again.
And we'll kind of, as people come back up out of being in imagery, definitely take your time. Let your breathing come back up to normal. I always think it's a good idea to have some nice filtered or pure water.
Mm-hmm.
It will help kind of ground you again and bring you back around as you're ready to do that. And I always suggest don't go out and operate heavy equipment, including vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes a little while for your mind and your senses to be back into a more conscious state.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Leslie, that was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Very calming and a great way to access inner wisdom and answers. And I know that I will be going back and listening to that again when I'm not on the air.
Yeah.
Myself. Because I can really get out there. with that. And for those of you that came in a little bit late to our show, we've been talking with Leslie Davenport tonight, and she's been sharing her wisdom, not our wisdom, but her wisdom. I guess our wisdom if we talk about that unity factor, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm getting a comment from White Lotus Love in the chat room that says, wow, that was amazing.
Great.
But Leslie has a wonderful background, a wonderful set of experiences, and she says she'd like a full hour of that. She's doing just some amazing things, and she's got a lot going on, private practices. You can certainly access her through her website, LeslieDavenport.com, which is at the bottom of our show description tonight. And Leslie, what else would you like to share as far as how people can contact you, any events or things that you have going on, anything that you want to promote?
Yeah, thank you. The website really is the easiest way to stay current, and it includes signing up for a newsletter, which I only send out about 3 times a year, but it'll include a little article or some latest things that are happening in the research world related to imagery and announcements about talks and workshops. And then also on my website, there is a calendar page, too, that you can access. And it links to my Facebook page, which I'm really kind of one of my current passions is really to bring the power of imagery to the healing that's needed in our environment and what's happening with climate change. So I have a little more of an emphasis that way on my Facebook page.
I think that's absolutely wonderful, and it really is a much needed area for us to be focusing on, is that global healing, because we are unified with nature. We do have that connection with our universe, and sometimes that's, in some ways, I would say for some people, it may be easier even to focus on some global healing to help them heal themselves.
Yes. Boy, you're right. It honestly, it cannot really be divided. Sometimes we need to, you know, shine the light on a particular area for a while, but knowing that it's all one thing is so important.
Oh, definitely. That compassion with our world is huge, and it's one of the things that I bring up in my books is, you know, as you help others, you're going to help yourself, and
yeah.
You're going to gain so much more than if you just focused on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really want to thank you for being with us tonight. It's been amazing having you here and having you bring some clarity to some areas and giving us those differentiations between imagery and visualization and how to do it on a self-imagery level. And again, we should mention your book, Healing and Transformation Through Self-Guided Imagery. And that is certainly something people can access through your website as well. And newsletter only 3 times a year. That's phenomenal these days. I'm used to getting things 2 or 3 times a day from some people. And I send out once a week, but, man, 3 times a year, that's a easy going for an email list.
Oh, well, this has really been a joy for me. It's really been lovely, and as you predicted, the time just really flew by.
It's hard to believe when I tell people that I'm doing a 2-hour show with you, and they're like, "Really? Like I'm the only guest on? I'm the only one that's going to be here?" Like, yeah, by really fast. I've had that many times from people, even people who, matter of fact, a few weeks back, I had somebody on that. Paul Tukey, who's pretty well noted in his field of organic yard care and things, and he says, "Oh, I just flew in off of a flight, and I never in my life could have imagined I could have sat down and did a 2-hour show and felt like it, you know, never felt like it was anywhere near 2 hours." He goes, "All my TV shows that I've done, all my, you know, public viewing I've done, I've never done a 2-hour show in my life." And he says, "I just never felt like it was that long." So
yeah.
It is absolute pleasure to have you here tonight, Leslie. It's been a real treat, a real gift for our listeners, and I just really want to thank you for giving us your time.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for all the great work you're doing making these programs available and this information. And
I think it's so important that we have a variety of options, and that's one of the things I've focused on, everywhere from higher-end things to low-cost things to things that are free, because oftentimes I think some of the people who need it the most don't have those big bucks to go out and spend. So if I can provide a quality show to bring people in who are doing this amazing work that they might not have access to otherwise, then it's a definite gift for me.
Oh, it sure is. It is for everyone.
Well, again, thank you so much. And I'm going to have to get some things wrapped up here for the show. And again, if anybody would like to check out more of Leslie's work, you can do so on her website at lesliedavenport.com. And just to give you an idea here, coming up next week on our show, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I have got Reverend Dr. Linda DeCoff, and she's going to be dealing with aspects of ascension. She wrote Bridge of the Gods, and she's going to be talking about how to elevate into the higher God self and Christ consciousness. So this is going to be really interesting, because even though she's got a big focus on God, her work is a very spiritually based work, so I don't want you to be put off by terminology by any means there. And it's really about tapping into that God self. My next set of books based on relationships, I'm working on getting them out. Again, they are basically, they're finished. I'm just trying to get through the publishing process with them and get those final touches in so that they'll be accessible to you. I've got several events coming up. Matter of fact, got a special this month for the month of August, and that gives you the opportunity to participate in some of my workshops at a really reduced rate. They're available for $75, which is a little over half off. Regularly, they're $155, and that is for a full-day workshop from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To take advantage of that, you're simply going to go to jessieannnicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. Select the workshops you're interested in. They're based in the Cedar City area, and there's still four of them left that you can sign up for at this point. And you'll just put in the promotional code 777 for that. So that's a great area. Again, I'm working on various things, and I did want to mention I will be at the Matriarch Gathering the first weekend in October. So anybody who'd like to come and join me with that, please feel free to do so. It's going to be an amazing thing. They have a pre-weekend event going on that's going to be a beautiful new moon ceremony and opening. And then also there will be 2 days of events. The Saturday is a women's only day, and then Sunday is co-ed, and very reasonably priced to come in for the whole weekend on those events and catch several speakers that are going to be great. And you can find out about that at the matriarchgathering.com. And I also want to mention that I've got several things that I'm offering now in the way of mini versions of my workshops, some online courses going on. They range from about $10 to $25. I'm running those normally about three times a week, although I'll have some that will be on the weekends occasionally with an entire chakra series coming up. I incorporate visualization in that work that I do, as well as educating you about different things and helping you grasp some understandings. Most of those are $10 to $15, by the way, and they run anywhere from about an hour to 2 hours in length, so that's worth checking out. And you can check those out at learnitlive.com/invite. That's INVITE /Jessie Ann Nichols George. And that'll get you in to see where you can see all of them. There's about 30, 35 events listed in there going on all the time. And then if you'd like to check out more of the work I do, check out some of the archive shows, the upcoming shows, watch video tips, you can do that at my website at jessieannnicholsgeorge1. That's the number 1.com. And I noticed somebody in the chat room was asking what day and time is the next show. They definitely want to tune in. This show is every Friday night at midnight. Midnight to 2 a.m. Eastern time, so it's a two-hour show. And we definitely look forward to having you come back and enjoy more of the guests that we have coming up, because they're always shifting and changing. And if you missed any part of the show, remember, do go back and catch it in the archives, because there is a lot of great information that we covered tonight, a lot of wonderful things. And we've got several shows right here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights we have Darren Bucaire, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. He has a little bit of discussion. He does some readings. Monday nights we have Kevin Baird walking on the sidewalk with his Horizon Oracle Journeys deck, a deck that he himself created, and you can find out more about that at templeofgaia.com. Wednesday nights we have Daniel, Janice, and Brett on our flagship show called Main Street Universe. And on Thursdays now, we have Queen Mother Amaku discussing her work with Egyptian culture. And, of course, Friday nights right here at midnight, we have Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with me. So that's kind of our lineup of shows here on Main Street Universe, and word is out that we might be adding a couple of more. So there's going to be some amazing things. White Lotus in California, the time of the show runs 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. for you. So 9 to 11 p.m. You can also get on my email list, which if you go onto my website at jessieannnicholsgeorge1, that's the number 1.com, I send out a newsletter once a week. It's got the upcoming show. It's got my blog post in it. It's got the monthly special. It's got the most recent video in it. Really easy, and I do just send out once a week on that. So that's a great option to stay on top of it. This is Jesse Ann Nichols, George. I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. I look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into activating compassion. Don't forget that if you've enjoyed the show this evening, share it with others. It'll be available at the same link in our archives. And I'm going to leave you tonight with the song Yearning For, also known as Over and Over. It's by Shem Shai. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week.
And if I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind. And to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with season of change inside. And we are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon. Oh, deep inside, the light within, shining to show you it's here to begin. When all I have is all I need, I will soar to the edge of eternity. And we see in eye to eye, one within love to be for the divine. And we're walking hand in hand, caught in the balance of God and man. Learning to walk just a little bit slower, whispering secrets that you can't keep it. No turning back now, this time we reveal it. Once you are another, all will discover the essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart still yearning for. Within the most beautiful lover, time is still done.
love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart is still yearning for. Over and over, life is your lover. Learning to walk just a little bit slower. Whispering secrets, I bet you can't keep it. No turning back now, this time we'll repeat it. Once you are another, all will discover. The essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart still yearning for. Yearning for.